Live from the seventh dimension via satellite.
You're listening to the Dust and Dignity podcast.
Dust and Dignity.
Dust and Dignity.
Dust Dignity.
Dust.
Dust and Dignity.
Dust.
Dust and
Dignity.
Just tell him you saw it on tonight.
Dust and Dignity.
Let's look at a case in point.
Welcome to the Dust and Dignity Podcast, where we explore the connections between leadership, social justice, and music. I'm your host, Dr. Bruce Campbell Jr. You can learn more about the podcast in each episode at drbrucecampbelljr.com.
Dignity.
Really excited to talk to my friend Anthony Fields, aka Tone B. Nimble. Tone has been a vital entity on the music scene for over 35 years. His calling started in the mid-1980s as a DJ spitting house, disco, and electro in Chicago's flourishing underground music scene. With an open mind and ear, Tone branched out into hip-hop early in his career. Tone's musical journey includes being a mixed show DJ, several DJ residencies, a music buyer, record label owner, and recording artist. Though his career path has been wide-ranging, Tone's primary focus is uncovering new sounds that inspire, uplift, and captivate listeners. As times and audiences have evolved, Tone has chosen to give special attention to his first love, collecting soulful disco records. With minimal time devoted to the business side of music, Tone turned his attention to digging and discovering new music. Concentrating on various styles of disco, it's the gospel sound that has seized his attention. He once shared, "The uplifting message, unmatched energy, and sheer emotion displayed in these recordings showcase the spirit that I try to present when I DJ." In 2011, Tone started Al Tone Edits with partner Al Bums, a disco edit label devoted to featuring lesser-known soul, disco, and gospel tunes. With support from the likes of Giles Peterson, Sadar Bahar, and many others, Altone Edits is regarded as a label for disco savants. 11 volumes deep, Altone Edits continue to grow in exposure while opening doors for the duo. Most recently, Tone developed the following for Soul Is My Salvation, a music series dedicated to dance music and DJ-friendly gospel tunes. The series has released 3 mixtapes on Record Breaking Music and 9 45s on Rain and Shine, with plans to expand into installations centered around the same theme. In 2019, Tone opened Conservatory Vintage and Vinyl with his wife. The store focuses on vintage records and mid-century modern furniture. Known for its great selection of soul and jazz, the shop hosts some of the world's most respected record collectors for digging and DJ sessions. Presently, Conservatory Vintage and Vinyl is Tone's primary focus, with an occasional DJ gig and his ongoing research in gospel music. So without further ado, let's get into this conversation with my man, Tone B. Nimble.
Dust and Dignity.
But what I wanted to start off with, Tone, is your upbringing. So if you can tell the good people a little bit about who you are, where you are, and what you do. Let's start there, and then we'll go back.
Okay, so presently, my 9-to-5 is I own a record store, and it's actually a record store / furniture store that specializes in mid-century modern furniture. We've owned it for 4.5 years. My wife basically runs the furniture side and I run the record side. As far as my record knowledge, it started probably in, I guess, 83.
And,
yeah.
Can I, well, let me go back. Hold on a second, because we gotta let people know. So, well, I'll say it later, but Conservatory Vintage and Vinyl.
Sure.
not in Chicago.
No, south suburbs. Like 40 minutes outside of Chicago, or maybe to the Chicago border is like 20 minutes, but from downtown Chicago, which most people use as a reference point, it's like 40 minutes from downtown Chicago.
Very easy to get to. I've been there myself.
Train station right across the street.
Right across the street. He's not talking about a couple blocks away. He's talking about you can see the train station from the front of the shop. Very easy to get to, and too much stuff in there that you want to bring everything home, and I know that firsthand.
So there's a lot of thought that went into the store.
Mm-hmm.
From a personal level, I grew up out there, so store was 5 minutes from my parents' home and basically 2 minutes from my present home. And when I was out there, I always had to go to the city to do stuff, whether it was to buy records, to party, whatever it was I wanted to do, I had to go to the city. And I always wanted something in my neighborhood that I thought was, you know, had the vibe that I was looking for. And that was one of the thoughts behind the shop, having something cool out there. Because there was a ton of us from the south suburbs who went to the city. This is like mid-80s. Always going to the city to party or to buy records or whatever. Not that there weren't record shops in the south suburbs. There were a few. But like the big dance stores or to find the coolest or the records earliest, you had to go to the city.
Okay. And I've seen from, you know, following the shop on social media that it's not just furniture and records. Like, you also have been doing events.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
We try to create as many revenue streams as possible.
Yeah.
And events aren't necessarily a revenue stream, but it brings a direct revenue stream, but it brings traffic to the store, and we hope that the traffic garners sales.
Yeah.
But sometimes we do events and it doesn't garner any sales. Like, sometimes we've done school events for high school kids, and the only reward is just having them have a safe space to do stuff that they don't normally get a chance to do, or to basically let people preview their talents.
Mm. So it's also about building community too.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So I want to go back. So you said 83 about music, but I want to go further, because you ain't no spring chicken. So let's go back a little bit and talk to me about your childhood and music that was playing that you can remember. Maybe some of the earliest music you can remember, like playing in the background when you were growing up.
So the two people in my early years that were into records was my dad's brother. You know, I always got the uncle who DJs all the barbecues.
Yep.
And my mom's mother, who I never really, I always referred to my dad's brother because he DJed the barbecues. But actually, my mom's mother had a record collection too. And she used to play Bohannon and George Benson, and she had a nice little stereo. She had good music taste.
Okay.
But it was a lot of Bohannon. I vividly remember her playing Thoughts and Wishes by Bohannon and other George Benson. And she had Nancy Wilson and the Supremes and all that. And then, so that was early 70s, mid 70s, all the way up through the early 80s. But then my dad's brother had a more extensive collection.
Okay.
And he used to DJ all the barbecues. And by DJing, I mean, he just was playing. It wasn't like he had a DJ set up. He was just providing the music. He'd bring a stack of records, and it was always like McFadden and Whitehead and Teddy Pendergrass and Minnie Riperton and you can name Marvin Gaye, the Jackson 5, Aretha Franklin.
Mm.
He loved some Whispers. They loved the Whispers, the Spinners, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes.
Okay.
Love those guy groups.
Interesting. So what were you listening to musically in like middle school, high school?
Okay, so a lot of my music that I got into was based on what I was doing. Mm-hmm. So I used to roller skate. So that was early and mid 80s. So we was roller skate jams. So some like classic rock, depends on what days you were going. When I was younger and my mother was taking me to the roller rink, it was soul and classic rock because it was kids there were, and it was out here and it was a diverse audience. So the music was diverse. Then as I got older, it was the same rink, but it was late night. Mm. And it was, you know, it was black folks. And it was JBs and old soul jams and slow jams that we were skating to. At that same time, I was also breakdancing. So in the mid 80s, we would get the soul, but we was also getting like the electro. So whether it was like John Rakaka or Freeze or, you know, Buffalo, you know, it was just 80s music. So 80s dance music or electro. So it could be Looking for the Perfect Beat or, you know, Planet Rock, mm-hmm, or Dominatrix.
Wow.
Bebop, Man Parrish, you know. All the electro jams for the breaking. So it was like a hybrid.
Okay.
You skate early, and then at the end, they'll shut down the rink and open it up to a dance floor, and they're playing like the electro. And at that same time, that's when house started to form in Chicago.
Okay.
So like early forefathers of Chicago house would come to this rink. This was Glenwood Roller Rink out in the South Suburbs. And they would, half the house tracks weren't even pressed on vinyl yet. They would show up with their four track and play the early house records. This was probably like, had to be like 85.
85. What's the name of, do you remember the name of the rink?
Oh yeah, of course. It's still open, Glenwood Roller Rink. And they still do JB Skate. Sunday nights is the main night, but yeah, it's still.
Wait, what's
the? There's like a skate renaissance right now.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
So yeah, they were able to capitalize off that. But yeah, Glenwood Roller Rink. But there was a few roller rinks out here. Markham Roller Rink and the South. These are the South Suburban staples. Glenwood and Markham were the main one. And then there was one in Richardson Park, which is even further south than us, that was called Olympic Skate World.
Wow.
And there was actually a skate documentary maybe about 5 years ago about roller skating. And it was there.
Okay, I know that documentary you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. They showed Olympic Skate World in that.
Wow.
Because at that time, that one was the only, skating was on a downfall, and they were just talking about rinks that were still open, and that was one of them. Mm. Mm.
So were you, besides listening, skating, and breakdancing, were you also starting to buy records at this point?
So I was buying records to break dance at home too. My parents had like some, you know, Wes Montgomery and Teddy Pendergrass, right. You know, the classic, Marvin Gaye. But I was buying like records to break to. This was junior high.
Okay.
So I guess that was like 83.
Okay.
Because I was in high school 84 to 88.
Okay.
So 82, 83, I was buying records to break to. I started learning how to DJ in 84. My man Cap D had one turntable in his basement. We were just scratching on that one turntable. And then he got another one with a pitch control and a mixer, and we were kind of like piecemealing it, learning how to mix. And then I wound up getting a pair of a Scott turntables with the spindle pitch control.
Yeah.
Straight turn on belt drives. I had those. That was probably like 85 and we were learning how to DJ. Then we had another friend that we met who went to another high school. He was a year younger than us. We were like sophomores. He was a freshman. And he actually had 1200s. His name was Chris Watkins.
Okay.
And from there, and it was four of us that learned how to DJ together. There was a guy named Andy who was 2 years, he was a year older than us, but he was 2 years ahead of us in high school. And he went to a different high school. It was David Kelly, who was Cap D. And it was Chris Watkins. It was the four of us that were basically music buddies in a variety of things involved in music. And all of us to this day are still involved in music.
Oh, wow.
Cap D, he runs the entertainment for the Golden State Warriors, the entertainment wing, and he's also chief counsel. He's got records with Ryan Fest and Georgia Ann coming out on Golden State Entertainment, amongst others.
Wow.
Andy, he was working for Kanye, but he's done stuff with Temptations, Mary J. Blige, and Raekwon. Like, he's still involved. Mm-hmm. I heard it. Someone told me recently he's got a hip-hop record with all gospel samples, and he's got, like, A-Bon, MJG, and, you know, all kinds. He's still involved. He's been in Cali for, like, 10 years.
Okay.
He also produced that BSTC record we put out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Andy's. We all.
So,
like,
that's Andy. Okay.
We got stories for days, and then Chris. He was DJing with us. We all were DJing together, and then we were throwing disco house parties at hotels. So yeah, that's how. So most people are like, oh, you were hip hop, blah blah. That's because that's what we were. That's how they knew us outside the city.
Yeah.
People from outside the city knew of us, learned of us during our hip hop years. But prior to that, we were like, we're all disco guys, house guys. Andy, Chris, and Dave, they all made house tracks. I only DJ, but we all threw parties, big house parties together.
Huh. So how, but.
Like at a hotel room, like maybe like 500 to 700 people, you know.
So this is the suburb, south side.
But we were throwing, we were young. You know, our first parties we threw out here.
What?
They were big. They were about 300, but they were in like hotel ballrooms. We're filling them up.
Yeah.
And then we were like, let's move to the big town. So we started throwing them in the city.
What?
They were still doing fine in the city too. But we started out here, but we felt like we all had outgrown out here. And we started throwing them in the city.
What? This is crazy.
Yeah. So Chris became our when we were doing the hip hop, Chris was our manager. He was the one who flew to New York and met with Stu Fine and got us this deal with Wild Pitch. And then he went on to run Shrewd Promotions. And he runs, I think McCluskey and Associates. He runs a firm now that owns a bunch of venues.
Okay. So, all right, talk to me about, like, post-high school. So, like, what was going on? Like, what were you doing? What were you doing? Like,
okay, so I'm gonna start with high school and then segue into.
Go for it.
So, obviously, we're 83, 84. We're talking about we were going to. I was 83, 84. I was breaking. House was starting to become into the. It was developing. As it was developing, our love for it and developed, and as it grew and became more accessible, we became involved in that culture. Mm,
especially where you guys are in Chicago, yeah.
Sure. Around 86, 87, it was guys around the school who had cassette tapes that had hip-hop on them. And we're playing it a little bit on the radio. You know, obviously, Cool J and, you know. So, hip-hop was developing. And in Chicago, it was two scenes. You were either hip-hop or you was house.
Okay.
You weren't both.
I got a clarifying question though.
And that was a major rift for a long time. Like, were you hip hop or were you house?
They wouldn't mix.
There were people who did mix it a little bit, but in general, the people who tried to mix the two together were kind of frowned upon.
Oh, wow.
Like you weren't authentic. Like, If you were in the house, that's what you're into.
Yeah.
Or if you're in the hip hop, that's what you can't be into both.
But let me ask a clarifying question around the music, because I understand the evolution of house in Chicago, right? So I get that.
Sure.
But what was the hip hop? What was the
okay?
Who are you listening to?
Okay, so the college stations As in every city, the college stations always play the hit music. And there was college stations here that was playing like Ultramagnetic. And you know, like,
right, okay.
Like the real.
Yeah.
But we lived in the suburbs, so we couldn't get it. We had another friend who lived in a suburb that was next to ours, who was a little closer to the city, who eventually, when we were full-fledged into the hip-hop, became part of, you know, the crew. His name was Steady Surf. He lived in Hazelcrest. And he had cassettes of WHBK, which is the University of Chicago.
Okay.
And the University of Chicago had a bunch of guys that were well-versed on early hip-hop to present. They still do shows.
Okay.
So we were getting the college tapes, hip-hop, but it was hella underground. There wasn't no parties to go to. And then the parties they get were smaller, you know, and you had to really know about them. Whereas house was big. Big hotel parties, you know, thousands of people at parties.
Wow.
So, and that's where the ladies were.
Yep.
So we were young. That's where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
Music is dope. It's just a dope environment. We're going to the house parties. But hip hop is like on the undercurrent and starting to grow and getting more exposure. And Dave was like starting to write little raps.
Okay, here we go.
So this probably like 87, I would think he's writing raps. Maybe 86, but definitely 87. And I'm starting to get my wiki on a little bit.
Here we go.
So we're making, so obviously he's DJing, he's rapping, I'm DJing. Andy and Dave, they produce, so they're making house beat, still making house music, but they're starting to make hip hop beats as well. He's got the SB12. I'm getting better on the cut. And then we graduate.
Mm-hmm.
Andy goes to Purdue for electrical engineering. Dave goes to Morehouse for journalism. And I go to Jackson State for communications. Chris is a year behind us. He's still at Ridge Central.
Okay.
So we come home on the holidays, work on music, or sometimes me and my Jackson State crew will go to Atlanta and hang out with Dave and try and work on some music. This is his early Freaknik years. We're going to the Freaknik to visit him. I'm DJing like parties, not on just cut, like I'm DJing parties. So I was DJing at Jackson State. One year they hired me to DJ at the Freaknik. So, you know, we're circulating a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
He's rapping. I'm building my name as a DJ. They're producing. So they're producing for other cats in the dorm. Andy is producing for other cats in Chicago.
Did you have the same DJ name? Did you have the same DJ name?
I was Tone Swift.
Okay.
And Steady Serve was like, so as we get more into hip hop, our crew is changing and we're meeting new people.
Yeah.
And one of the pivotal people figures that we meet is a guy named Steady Serve. True B-boy, rapper. You know those guys who just live. He could break. He could rap. He was just
doing everything.
He was just a hip hop dude.
Yeah.
He's got the cassette. His mom's got the cool jazz collection, the Dorothy Ashby records, and the, you know, Gene. Like, he's that dude.
Yeah.
He goes to a different high school, but we're crewed up. Like me and him, we still break. So me and him break together. Him and Dave rock, freestyle together, and Dave and Andy is supplying us all with the beats. So holidays, summertime, we crewed up. We hip hop. We, you know, now it's hip hop parties. I'm known, so I'm DJing some of the hip hop parties.
Okay.
I get tied with the skills, so I'm starting to enter DJ competition. Most of my skills were developed while I was at Jackson State. So, fast forward 1993. So let me go back. One of my roommates in college was from South Carolina.
Okay.
And his name was Eric Blake. His best friend back home at in South Carolina was Eclipse.
Oh.
Dust and Dignity.
So this is before, Eclipse is originally from Rhode Island, but he moved, I guess his high school years, he lived in South Carolina. Because even one Thanksgiving, I went home with Blake. Eric, his last name is Blake, we called him Blake. And I met Eclipse, and he worked at a record store there. He had all the hip hop. He was like how he is now. He's a hip hop. He was a hip hop encyclopedia back then. So we used to send our demos through Blake to Eclipse to get critiques. And he was dissing them, left and right. He would always diss them. So fast forward 93, we all decide we're gonna drop out of college and do music. So me, Dave, Andy, Steady Sir, we all pack up and move to my apartment in Jackson, Mississippi. My dad showed us a little love. He's like, everybody had to bring this to their parents, so it was like, you know.
Right.
We grew up, I would say we grew up middle class.
Okay.
So I say that to say that the pressure, it's a different pressure of dropping out of school. Let me just, I'm not shaming anybody's economic upbringing.
Yeah.
But there's a different, there's a standard.
Yep.
For better or for worse.
Mm-hmm.
So wasn't, Dave's father was the first, one of the first black partners at a prestigious firm. My father was into, he's an IT guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he was one of the first blacks in data processing, blah, blah, worked at Xerox, you know. So my mother was a teacher. So it was the whole, I say that to say, when we dropped out of school, it wasn't popular in our household.
Yeah, you needed approval.
Right.
Yeah.
So we were doing that. We dropped out. We struggling in Mississippi. But we're working on demos. We're able to work on music. We found a studio there. We're working on music. And maybe after about 9 months, we're like, this is not popping. We moved back home. We were still working on music, working on demos. And we finished the demo and we sent it to Eclipse. By this time, when I first met Eclipse, it was like 89. Now we're fast forward, it's like 93, 94.
Okay.
Eclipse is now DJing for MC Search,
right,
for Third Base.
Yep.
I think Third Base had broke up, or he was just DJing. But whatever it was, he's now working at Wild Pitch. Search is running Wild Pitch, and Eclipse is one of the A&Rs. He likes the demo we send.
Okay.
He's like, oh, it was 50 years on. It was 50 years, a song called Hip Hop Is Back. They love it. They like, okay, we like it. We need to, we want to talk about trying to sign you. So Chris, who was at that point was going to Tennessee State, flies to New York with a demo and meets with Stu Fine. And they figure out, and we get like a single deal with an option for a full-length album.
Okay.
They send, so we sign, we get through the deal. We got lawyer parents. We got lawyers that are, some of the parents are lawyers, so they're going through the, so we're going through the contract with a fine-tooth comb.
Yeah.
So, like, I would say other artists, they may sign a deal because they're like, this is their way. It wasn't really a way for us. It was just, we wanted to put out records. We didn't even care with Wild Pitch. We were like, we know Wild Pitch has a reputation for screwing cats, but man, Main Source, Gangstar.
Yeah, come on.
It's killer groups on Wild Pitch. So if we're on Wild, that's a nice association.
Yep.
Good deal or bad deal? Even though our parents weren't going to let us sign a bad deal, I just want to put it out there, like, We was down to sign the deal regardless because we wanted to be with Wild Pitch. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about being screwed. It was about putting out a dope record with a label with dope label mates. Mm-hmm. So we get through that. We sign the deal. They send us money. We actually record the first single. They're working on treatments for the video.
Okay.
And then they lose their distribution basically through EMI.
Okay.
So basically he shuts it down. So the record never comes out. Mm. At that time, I'm entering DJ battles. I do the new music seminar. I enter actually a small DJ battle in New York. We went to new music seminar one year, kind of all over the place. Went to a new music seminar one year and learned about a small DJ battle, and it was like weeks after the new music seminar.
Okay.
And I went, and I think Clark Kent was a judge, Lord Finesse was a judge, and I think Raider was a judge.
Okay.
And I was lighting cats up. It was like, who is this dude? This dude from Chicago that we don't know who's lighting these cats up. And Clark was like, man, you're nice. And he met me, we vibed, and he was like, yo, we're going to make you a Superman. So, like, if you hear him talk about the Superman, he always talks about all these well-known cats, and then he's always like, and Tony Nimble. And they're like, who is that?
Right, who is that?
Who is that? He's like, this dude from Chicago, he's really nice.
Superman Crew. Superman Crew with DJs. It started with me, Scratch, and Richie Rich. And it was because we just were a crew of DJs who worked with each other to make each other better all the time. And then it branched out. We brought in DJ Aladdin. We brought in DJ Miz. We brought in Plastic Man. We brought in Tombi Nimble. We brought in Muggs. But the idea was to help each other get better and to rep each other. So in our world, none of us were less than each other. None of us was better than each other. We were all down together. And it wasn't to go against any other crews, because at that point there were no crews. You know, it was about being a solidarity of DJs that really gave a damn about each other. And we just cared about being better DJs than regular guys.
It never really did anything. I never really did much with them, but that tag to when I went back home with that tag, it gave me clout. Yeah. Like, oh, how, like you're like. Even though we never did one thing with them. It was just a crew, we were cool.
Different status.
I never even met
them. Yeah, different status.
I really, really just knew Richie Rich, Scratch, and Clark.
Yeah.
But when I went home, they like, everybody was, if you were a DJ and you cut, you knew who the Superman was.
Yeah.
So they were like, I had a little juice on in the street.
Yeah.
And from there, and I was DJing parties, hip hop parties. From there, I got on a radio show. Well, there was a guy named Pink House. This new station started up, and he was getting a radio show Monday through Friday on national radio, 10 to 2.
Oh.
And he needed a mix DJ, and he had me become the mix DJ. So I DJed on national airwaves Monday through Friday, 10 to 2 for like 2 years.
Wow.
Unfortunately, it got cut short through it's a long story that I try to keep short. We were still promoting events while all this was going on and throwing shows, and we threw a Raekwon and Ghostface show.
Okay.
Are you familiar? Have you ever heard me tell this story?
Mm-mm.
Okay. You'll find it interesting. So, I ran it through the radio station.
Oh, okay.
That's how, it was like, I'm on the air.
Yeah.
I'm like, so when we booked Ghost and Ray, we had heard them on the Mobb Deep table. I'm like, man, these guys are nice. They're about to be the next thing.
Right.
Let's get them early on a promotional tour, and it could be a dope show.
Yeah.
We reach out to the label. They agree. Ghost and Ray don't have an album out yet. They're like, yeah. But they're touring with Wu-Tang, so they're busy. So the show keeps getting pushed back. By the time... So it's a promotional show. They're just coming. We're getting it for free. By the time the show is booked, the Cuban Link album had dropped. They're popping.
Yeah.
They're popping. So people don't even believe, like, man, we added King, like King Just was on the bill, Capadonna. We brought him in a day early. 2 days early.
Oh, wow.
So people, so they freestyle on the radio. Yeah. Well, so Ray and Capadonna came early. Ghost Hitch came a day before. So it's cracking. We throw the show on the South Side because I'm like, man, we're getting them cheap. There's never shows on the South Side. Yeah. Operation Push. We're going to throw that Operation Push. My dad's brother was like Jesse's right-hand man. I've known Jesse since I was like 4.
Okay.
So
you got to hook up there. Operation.
So, yeah. Boom. We're going to keep it cheap. $10. Ghostface, Ray, Capadonna, King Just, other Chicago. I mean, $10.
Here we go.
So, boom. Show jumps off. It is. It's just crazy. Craziness everywhere. People rushing the door. throwing bottles at this crap. Oh, it was wild. It was wild. They haven't even started the show. So
right.
When they get there, they're like, let me rewind. When Ray get there, we're eating dinner. He's like, man, you know we can't do this show for free. But I was like, yeah, we'll hit you. In our mind, we had already thought, like, we'll give him 5 and 8 G, whatever.
Right. Right.
He's like, I was like, yeah, we got you. So he like, cool. So the night of the show, I'm waiting for them to go on.
Wait a second. Something already tells me that part right there is critical to the story. But go ahead.
I'm waiting to go on. It is.
Yeah, of course.
But when you hear the end of the story, you're really gonna laugh. So I'm waiting for them to come on stage. It's straight up craziness out there. Bottles being thrown. The show is dope, but it's just rowdy.
Yeah.
They like, yo, you need to go upstairs. They're not coming on stage. I'm like,
Here we go.
They like, nah, we can't go on stage until we need 10 stacks.
Yeah.
And I'm like, nah, I ain't doing that. But I'm stubborn. My old man is there, standing right there. He like, these people will tear this place up if you don't just give them the money and keep it moving. So we agree. We give them the money. They go and rock. It's a wild show, but it's a dope show.
Okay.
This bottle's being thrown. Ghostface throws a bottle. It hits a kid who's taking a picture, cuts his face open.
Ugh.
Boom. So, show ends. I'm leaving out a lot of details, but the show ends. Boom. Radio station hears. Hey, I heard. They charged y'all. I was like, yeah. They said that show was supposed to be free. I was like, it's cool. No, it's not. They had my back. It was crazy.
Wow.
So the radio station says we go pull all of RCA's music off the radio station.
What?
Boom. They pull it. Loud is upset. Loud cuts us a check, sends us a check, covers all the fees. Boom. Seems like everything is cool now. I got my money. They got their money. Just as album comes out. And Pink House is like, hey, they talking about you on that record?
Uh-oh.
Spot. Windy City Promoters try to hold on.
What?
Ghostface, he's straight up. He's not shouting us out. He's dissing us on the record.
Yeah.
And everybody knows that verse.
Yeah.
And he's like, Windy City Promoters. And he's talking about that. So he met. So the host of the show that I did is mad again. On top of that, the guy that got hit with the bottle is now trying to sue.
Yeah.
The radio station.
Oh yeah,
because I ran the show through the radio station.
Yeah.
And they hung with me as long as they could, but they were like, "Yo, we gonna have to let you go because we can't take a hit on a lawsuit like that."
Yeah.
But that's why I got fired.
Wow.
And that was the end of that. And I never even tried to get in radio again. I mean, they were like, "We could get you." I was like, "I'm good."
Yeah.
I mean, it was a cool experience. I mean, I don't think I could have did it too much longer, but just because when I was only in like 94, 95, 96, those were crazy hip hop.
Yeah, music. Crazy.
So I was playing. So it was when I was playing. It was basically like a college show on regular radio, mm-hmm. from 10 to 12 every night. So that parlayed in the mid 90s, and then.
So you're just doing hip hop at this time.
I'm only doing. I'm buying soul and disco records.
Yeah.
But I'm only doing hip hop at this time.
Gotcha. Okay.
At that same time, Fat Beats is starting up, and Eclipse is over at Fat Beats, and we take a single that we were going to do with Wild Pitch, change it around a bit, and start our own label, distributed by Fat Beats there, and with our first record coming out in 96.
Okay.
And that's when we hit the ground running from there, putting out. First, we were just putting out our records, and then we were in a crew called The Family Tree. We started putting out other members of The Family Tree. Dave was primarily running it early on. I was really DJing and working a regular job.
Mm, okay.
Dave eventually went back to Morehouse and finished. Early on, we were all a group, but we all kind of split up and did our own thing. I mentioned the Andy Steady Serve. Steady Serve did his own thing. And one of the first earlier mid-90s hip-hop 12s to come out, Andy produced Steady Serve. It's called You Know the Time. And it's like a cult record here. They sampled the Bruce Lee Enter the Dragon.
Oh, okay.
Scratches on there.
Yeah, you don't stop. Check it out. See, I'm a representative and I represent talent times art times work. And I build with math, so I call it craftmatics. You know what I'm saying? Steady serve, nonstop at your services. Along with the funky attack with the murder mix. AOP, what the flavor is. Check it out, y'all, check it out. Rhyming ain't shit, but combining words put it to flavor. It equals steady serve, so I convey by the bundle whenever I feel good. Always happy to be here, alive and ripping neighborhoods. With the goods for your head maneuver. And if you're old school, well, maybe this could be an excuse to do the wop for strength, don't stop the up and down. And don't forget the way the shit's pronounced and announced through mics, giving sights. I'm unpredictable, so won't you think twice, three times, and maybe four before you step to the future with immature behavior. You're amateurs, I know I have the flavor to stick a word beat. For B over melodies, battling SP-12s or MPC 60s. See, when I'm in operation, you better examine. Observe who not to sound like the next time when you think you're jamming. Words in various styles like I do when I provide crowds reasons to get loud. I'm staying true, sticking to the blue. Printed line of pleasure to your mental with refreshing designs. Give a practice, alarms and words evacuate with charm. And if this has you whopping, wave your arm. Yeah, that's yours, you know the time. Kick it on while the man intertwines with the new words, funky fresh cuts. Don't be nimble with the true essentials and the two techniques. Getting loose, check it out. We just roll into the suburbs. See, I'm a lyrical graffiti artist drawing funky crowds, clacking dough. My pieces are profound, my speeches are broken down into syllables. You see, I built a fortune on a scale of 1 to 10.
That's and dignity.
I think that came out like 93, 94. And then ours came out in 96. And we put the single out, and then around 98, the first album came out, and then a larger label from Chicago wanted to reissue it. So they reissued it and then put out our second album. And label in the UK called Cup of Tea licensed it and issued it in the UK and in Europe. And that's how we started touring Europe.
Wow. So that was the first time you were touring? What was that like?
Yeah. I mean, we were doing like shows in the city, a lot of shows in the city, and spot dates here and there in the States. But it was cool. I mean, those are some of the best times of my life, those early tours, all natural tours over in Europe. Mm-hmm. Cool venues, packed venues, dope audience. It's just, I mean, it gives you unrealistic expectations, but it was a dope.
This is in your, how old are you at this time?
I have to be 98, like 28.
Yeah, say late 20s, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, all right, late 20s, forget it. And on tour, forget it, yeah, all right.
So it was cool.
Yeah.
We did a couple tours, and then while we were over there, as the going is getting good, we're about to release our second album, right before our second album. While one of the tours, Dave meets a girl of Islamic faith, and she introduces Islam to him. I think he was familiar with it a little bit more, but I think he dug deeper when he interactions with her and converted to Islam and basically quit music.
Mm.
So that's why when you met me later on, I was running the label because he had quit. He wasn't doing music. He eventually came back, but I continued to run the label. So a lot of the records that came out on All Natural Inc., I was running it at that time.
Yeah, that's when I first met you.
He had set up a foundation. We had the distribution and everything in line, but he was done with music.
Wow. Okay.
So the only major effect was that he was the face.
Right.
So we could no longer tour. And the goal was to tour. He was going to tour, and then we were going to introduce other artists while we were on tour.
Yeah. Yeah, he killed all that.
Dust and Dignity.
We are going to take a pause from our conversation with Tone B. Nimble. We've been having such a great conversation with him, but we want to take a pause as we get ready for part two of this interview, where Tone shares more details about touring, his interest in gospel records, and his leadership in social justice work. So stay tuned for part two of this interview with Tone B. Nimble. Thank you for joining us on this journey and tuning in to the latest episode of the Dust and Dignity podcast. You can learn more about the podcast at drbrucecampbelljr.com, where we profile our guests and the music from each episode. You can also subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other services where you listen to your podcasts. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter or Instagram at Dust, the letter N, Dignity, or just Dust and Dignity on Facebook. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.